The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome, everyone. And there's more chairs inside here if you want to come all the way in or bring a cushion and sit on the floor or whatever. Just please come in. And so welcome, everyone, to the Insight Meditation Center. We often call ourselves IMC. My name is Gil Fronsdal, and we have been here in Redwood City for 10 years now. Before that, we were in Palo Alto. We were for Palo Alto and Menlo Park for about 15 years. Back then, we rented facilities in churches and different places. And then as our community grew, at some point became time for us to have our own home. And so we bought this small church 10 years ago, and we've grown here quite wonderfully. It's been wonderful to be part of this community in Redwood City. People are still coming in, so I'll say a little bit about myself, which is probably the least important part of this evening. So my name is Gil Fronsdal, and I'm one of the two principal teachers here. And the other teacher is a woman named Andrea Fella. And I have been practicing Buddhism and Buddhist meditation for pretty much my whole adult life. First I got interested in it when I was about 20. And after I finished college, I went off to study at Zen centers here in this country. Eventually was ordained as a Zen monk, Zen priest. Went to Japan and practiced Zen in Japan. Went off to Southeast Asia and practiced Buddhism in Thailand and Burma. And was ordained for a short while as a Burmese Buddhist monk. Eventually I came back to this country, kept practicing here for a while, and then I went to graduate school. And so what would someone do in graduate school if they've done all these years of monastic life but study Buddhist studies? And, lack of imagination. So then I went to, in 1990, I came to this area to do a doctoral work in Buddhist studies at the Religious Studies Department at Stanford. And at that time, I was asked to, I was beginning to be trained to become a Buddhist meditation teacher, and I was asked to take over the small sitting group, meditation group in Palo Alto. And that group was, when I started, got involved, there was about 12, 15 people, and that's the one that slowly grew over time until we have this thriving community here of meditators. Here in Redwood City. And people come from all over the peninsula, the community of people interested. So, I'm a little bit surprised to find that this is where I ended up in my life. I wasn't planning this to be in the peninsula. But because of that small sitting group that grew, that became the primary dedication of my life, was to kind of support and let that community grow. So when I finished my studies at Stanford, I just stayed in the area. And now this is what I do, is I'm kind of the teacher for this center here, and we have programs throughout the week. Lots of people come, as apparently a lot of people is happening tonight. Thank you for coming. It's one of my favorite things to do here is to teach this course, because I love the topic of mindfulness. I love the practice of mindfulness. And so it's a privilege to be able to share something that I delight in a lot. I've done this many times, this course, and still is one of the best, most interesting things I do, I feel. And one of the things I'm hoping to do as I teach you this is to surprise myself. So a lot of what I'll say is perhaps I've said many times before because it's pretty introductory, but I'm still hoping I'll say something that'll surprise me. So I'll be listening too. So this is a 6-week course, introducing you to the practice of mindfulness, especially mindfulness meditation. And mindfulness, as maybe some of you know, has become quite popular in the last, in the last 20 years, in outside of Buddhism. People talk about the secular applications of mindfulness, and it's in many hospitals around the country now have mindfulness clinics where people go and do mindfulness-based stress reduction. Various forms of therapy, schools of therapy have incorporated mindfulness, and there's mindfulness-based cognitive therapy for depression and different things. I was at teaching a retreat in May, a meditation retreat at Spirit Rock, a retreat center we have up north. And this woman who was a officer, colonel, sergeant, I don't know what she was, in the Army. And she came to the retreat and she said, the Army is paying for me to be at this Buddhist retreat. Because I'm interested in discovering how we can use mindfulness to help Iraqi vets deal with trauma. And she thought, you know, she wanted to go into it deeply herself so she can understand, you know, how this practice can help people with trauma and that kind of difficulty. So she wasn't interested in Buddhism per se, but she was interested in the practice of mindfulness. And I think one of the beautiful offerings that Buddhism has made here in the modern world is to freely offer its practices of both practices of compassion, practices of mindfulness, and other things freely outside of its Buddhist context for anybody to use. And that's a spirit in which it's offered here at IMC. We hold the Buddhism, we're a Buddhist center, unapologetically so, but we hold the Buddhism quite lightly, and we don't really care if you become a Buddhist. We're not here to make anybody Buddhists. But we have a great value in the practices that Buddhism has to teach, the practice of mindfulness, the practice of concentration, the practices of compassion, of loving kindness, practice of ethics. And so it's wonderful to share that to other people who see the benefit from doing these practices. There are many benefits from practicing mindfulness, and most of those benefits derive from the fact, from two reasons. One reason is that you begin seeing more clearly, much more than you people usually do living their life, what's actually going on in their lives, what's actually happening. Because to be mindful means to pay attention, to pay attention in a heightened way, in a careful way. The other thing that the primary benefit comes from mindfulness is it tends to reduce stress, strain, tension. Because it's hard to maintain a stressful attitude, stressful behavior in our body and minds if we're paying careful attention. Usually stress requires us to be obsessing about something, caught up in something. And mindfulness is the opposite of obsessing, opposite of being caught, preoccupied. So as we stop being preoccupied and lost in our fears, our desires, our anxiety, you know, all kinds of things, then it starts settling down into the present moment in a better way. A lot of stress tends to fall away. The body changes. A lot of the tension that people carry in the body begins to slowly unwind and dissolve. The tension we carry in our mind tends to settle away. And so people feel the benefits of becoming calmer, more settled. Oh, I should say before I go much further, if you have trouble hearing, we have these hearing assistant devices. And so they're over on the box by the counter there in the cabinets just outside. So if anybody can't hear, which is a strange thing to say, right? So if you can't hear, then we have these hearing assistant devices. Raise your hand. And maybe Shin Kwan or Don will find it for you. Anybody need any? You okay? Everybody here is okay? Okay. So there are many benefits of mindfulness. So the two primary ones that most people focus on is the value of seeing more clearly what's going on in their life and being able to de-stress and be a little bit calmer than usual. There's many more. In Buddhism, mindfulness is considered to be the practice par excellence for attaining spiritual liberation. The depth of Buddhist spirituality is said to come out of the practice of mindfulness. You don't have to take it that far that you have to start worrying about having spiritual depth if you're worried about such things. But for Buddhism, it's very important. They're now teaching spiritual depth when you take a mindfulness-based stress reduction clinic at Stanford. But the potential in mindfulness is quite deep and quite strong. And some people get the hang of the value of it, and they see that this is a really valuable thing to integrate and incorporate into the fullness of their life. And remarkable things begin happening when the mind is no longer stressed, when the mind experiences a deep sense of release or ease or peace. And that ease and peace in Buddhism has to do with the spiritual depth that we're pointing to. So what I'll do today, what I'll do this 6 weeks is offer you the teachings we have, basic teachings in the practices of mindfulness meditation. And the way it unfolds is that it's done progressively. So each week builds on the week before. they're kind of simple idea, especially it's kind of simple what we do today, but this provides the foundation for the next weeks, with the goal that you will get a sense, have a general idea of how to be mindful in all areas of your life, how to bring a heightened beneficial attention in the present moment to what's happening in all aspects of your life. So today we start with a foundation, which is the breath. Breathing is a stabilizing and useful vehicle or focus for entering into the world of mindfulness. Next week we'll talk about mindfulness of the body. A huge part of mindfulness is not about the mindfulness, but rather is body fullness, becoming embodied, being connected to your body. So next week is about mindfulness of the body. The third week is mindfulness of emotions. The idea in mindfulness is you're not kind of parking your emotions at the door and leaving them behind, but you're learning a wise way to engage with your emotions, to live with your emotions, and that wise way is found through the vehicle of mindfulness practice. So learning how to be present for emotions is a very important tool, very important part of our practice. The fourth week will be mindfulness of thinking. And some people think it should be the first week, because thinking one way or the other is often one of the people call it the obstacle to meditation, because the mind wanders off so much in thought. In fact, some people who are new to this, and maybe some of you will succumb to this, is that your mind is going to be so busy thinking that you're going to find it challenging to sit down and meditate. And in that challenge, you say, well, I can't do it, and you'll give up. But please don't give up too easily. Meditation can be challenging, but with time, things settle down, things change. The mind is malleable, it can be shaped. And in Buddhism, we talk about it being a slow, gradual change, step by step. And so we start with the very simple steps the first week, and then we build. And so it's on to the fourth week that I'm going to talk about mindfulness of thinking. They give you a handle how to be mindful of thinking, how to be included as part of the field. And then we go on from there a little bit. Because it's some of you may be the first time you've been here, I like to say that everything that we do at all the practices, all the teachings, everything we offer here at IMC is offered freely. And that's part of our spiritual tradition, that part of our practice, part of our spiritual tradition, part of our values is to make everything be generous and just generously kind of practice generosity and offering what we have, something we think is quite precious, freely to anyone without asking for any money at all. We do have these boxes, donation boxes by the door, and because we do have expenses after all. We have a building and this is my primary livelihood. It comes from working here, doing this. And so those expenses, are supported by the voluntary donations of people who come here. We don't make a big thing about it, about donations, and we don't spend a lot of time asking about it. But because it's many of you the first time, I just let you know that's how it works here. And so that box by the door is there if you want to use it. There's two kinds of slots. One is for what's called operations, so the expenses of running the place. And the other slot says teacher. And whoever's a teacher for whatever particular event that you're going to will receive the income, the money that comes in through the teacher slot. You know, for example, so I don't have, there's no salary. It's very interesting because I don't get a salary here. But all the money I receive has come through those slots. And so it's kind of interesting. You know, it's kind of unexpected. I love it because it allows me to keep reminding myself that I do this because I love it and I just want to be generous and offer it that way. So, how many of you have meditated before? So maybe about half of you or so? And those of you who have meditated, how many have you done Vipassana or mindfulness meditation, insight meditation? So about half of those again. And the people who have done other kinds of meditation, some of you have maybe done Zen meditation. Is that a few people? And Tibetan meditation, mantra meditation like TM, is that something? It's a few people. That's why I started with TM, doing mantra meditation when I was in college, when I was 19. So there are different kinds of meditation practice. And I like to say that there are as many different kinds of meditation as there are kinds of sports. So, you know, if someone says, you know, you tell someone, I practice sports, I do sports, It's kind of interesting to know that, but, you know, is it football or ping pong or curling or, you know, it doesn't tell you much, you know, what does it mean? So the same thing, if someone says, I meditate, it doesn't say much because there's so many different kinds of meditation. In the Buddhist tradition, we tend to divide meditations into two general categories. Those that tend to focus more on developing calm and concentration, and those who tend to focus more on developing insight or mindfulness. And so here at IMC, the emphasis is more on the mindfulness part, which is to develop a heightened sense of awareness, heightened attention, which I think is, you know, it's a little bit of my karma, because, you know, growing up, my mother kept telling me, Gil, pay attention. Gil, pay attention. And I wouldn't listen to her. So I had to make up for it as an adult and do this kind of practice where you train your attention. And luckily, attention is something that can be trained. You don't have to just continue living with the degree of attention that you have. Many people don't realize that they can have a better capacity for attention. They can train your attention because it never occurred to them to look at their attention and what they do with their attention. But generally, once you start paying attention to your attention, what goes on with your awareness, most of the time your awareness is being hijacked. Most of the time your awareness is passively going along with whatever's happening. Whereas what we're trying to do here is not let awareness or attention be a passive participant that just goes along and kind of supports whatever you're doing, including being mindless. We're trying to reclaim or claim our mindfulness for ourselves so we have some ability to, I don't know if control is the right word, but some ability of agency, some ability to live with it and choose how we use our attention. So rather than having our habitual, automatic, reactive mind choosing what happens to our attention, we have some ability to step back and use our attention to pay more careful attention to what's going on. So then I'll tell you one story of in the old days in Japan, in the Zen world, Zen masters were supposed to be known for three things: their meditation, their calligraphy, and their poetry, ability to read poetry. So there was this kind of arrogant, wealthy man who got some really expensive white silk to write on, silk paper, and came to the Zen master and said, "Here's a beautiful scroll. Can you write on this scroll so I can hang it in my wall? The most essential teachings of Buddhism." And the abbot said, "Sure." So he took this beautiful scroll and he wrote the words across it, the character in Chinese, Japanese, for attention. And he handed the scroll to the man. And the man said, "Oh, you don't seem to understand. I want the most profound and most essential teachings of Buddhism." And so the Zen master said, now I see, okay. And so he took a second piece of silk and he wrote the words, "Attention, attention." And so the guy said, "But you don't seem to understand. I mean, now this is, I'm an important person, I'm well educated, I know a lot about Buddhism already, and I want the most essential, the most important, the pithiest, the most valuable teachings of Buddhism. Can you just kind of do a nice poem or say it in some powerful, you know?" So the Zen master said, "Oh, no, of course, now I understand." So then he wrote, in the third silk, he wrote, "Attention, attention, attention." That's what we're going to do. Pay attention. So let's start something by jumping in. Don't really change your posture or do anything. Just close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, what do you notice? What comes to your attention here in the present moment? What are you aware of? And of course, there's many, many things in the present moment you can be aware of. You can be aware of your body, your thoughts, your feelings, your attitude, my voice, the other people in the room, the sounds, many things. But as you notice whatever comes to your awareness, see if you can have the attitude for a few moments here that it's completely okay for you to be the way you are, completely okay to experiencing what you're experiencing. Just for a few moments. Then all you're supposed to do is to notice it. Be with it, be present. If you're uncomfortable, for a few moments here, be okay with that. Don't struggle with it or do anything with it. Just notice it as if it's okay to be uncomfortable. And then is it possible for you to put to rest any reactive movements of your mind, of judging or commentary or criticism or desire or wanting things to be different? Just for a few moments, so your attention is kind of very relaxed. Just to notice what's going on for you. This is how it is. And then very quietly, softly in your mind, in whatever way that makes sense to you, stay with what's happening, but gently acknowledge it. Almost like you're just kind of just nodding your head in that direction. Just so you kind of acknowledge, oh, this is what's happening now. There's something, sensations in your body. There's thoughts of any kind at all. There's emotions, attitudes, judgments, reactions, sounds. There's no problems, it's just something to be present for. And there's really no need to change anything except for when you lose touch with the present moment, when you wander off in thought, then somehow bring yourself back to what's here in a very simple, open way. Don't worry about how long you can stay present. Just come back and be with whatever's here. So, and then to end these few moments, you can take a couple of deep breaths, and then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So what I guided you in there was a very simple practice of mindfulness, of paying attention. Mindfulness is the capacity to pay attention to what's happening in the present moment without getting caught up in our reactions, our judgments, and our commentary with what's happening. So mindfulness has to do with the present moment, what's happening in the present moment. And so part of mindfulness is to train the mind to begin being in the present moment, to encourage the mind to want to be in the present moment. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to, once we're in the present moment with our attention, to train ourselves to learn how to relax enough so that we don't entangle our attention with reactivity or judgments with wanting or not wanting, being for or against what's going on. So we're not caught up in these things. So the attention becomes more relaxed and open. And in Buddhism, sometimes we talk about the difference between attention when it's contracted and tight and when it's expansive and relaxed. And so, you know, if you know, you've probably had the experience of minding your own business, having a good time, being relaxed, and then something or other reminds you of some big concern you have. Like, it's May 15th and you realize you forgot your taxes, to do your taxes. And so you're a month late on your taxes, and suddenly you realize it, and suddenly everything gets focused around the fear and the concern. What does it mean I haven't done my taxes? And so the mind gets, attention gets contracted and focused in, whereas before, maybe you're walking down a beautiful day and the mind was kind of open and relaxed. So the attention can be contracted or expansive. Contracted is when we get caught by something. Expansive is when we're not necessarily caught by anything. When the mind is expansive, then we say it's also much more creative. Then the mind is much more able to respond wisely to what's going on. A contracted and tight mind usually doesn't respond, available to itself all the intelligence, all the resources, all the intuition that helps us make the best decisions in our lives. So first is a training to be in the present moment, and then it's slowly a training to help purify the attention, so we have the attention becomes purer and purer, less and less reactivity as part of it. What that means is that we train ourselves to be okay, within reason, with what we're experiencing. And this is a hard thing for some people to learn, because we have such a strong tendency to judge and feel like something is wrong, or something's wrong with me, I have to fix things. And it's counterintuitive sometimes to sit there and just allow it to be there and use our attention to be with it, rather than trying to fix it, do something with it. A friend of mine was teaching mindfulness to people who had chronic pain. And he was teaching it. There was a person came who was a retired police officer. He was apparently a pretty tough character. And he had extremely bad back pain. The doctors couldn't help him anymore. And so he, kind of a last effort to do something, he came to a mindfulness-based pain clinic my friend was teaching. And one of the first things my friend told him was, okay, now close your eyes and bring your attention and feel your back pain. And the guy got really angry at my friend, because he said, I'm here not to feel pain. I'm here to have the pain go away. And you're telling me to feel it even more? And so it took a few weeks. Eventually the person found the benefit of what they were being taught and actually helped his back pain. But it's counterintuitive, the idea that you're actually turning towards something and learning how to be non-reactive. And the same thing is true for a lot of pleasure. Meditation can be extremely pleasurable. Meditation can sometimes give birth to a lot of bliss. And that training and mindfulness is to be there with the bliss and not contract around that, not latch onto that, but keep it relaxed, non-reactive, present moment awareness of bliss, as anything else. Makes some sense? So I'm going to now teach you a little bit of how to do this more formally as a meditation practice. It's not easy to be in the present moment if you have a lifetime of having a habit of being somewhere else with your mind. The most minds are spent most of the time living there and then, as opposed to here and now. And so it's a training now to change that direction and start being more here and now. And so we need help. So one of the helps is our posture. So when you sit down to meditate, it's good to have a good meditation posture. And there's two reasons for that. A posture which embodies a certain degree of alertness helps us to be alert, to pay attention. Also, you want to have a posture that allows you to sit still for some length of time without the posture becoming unduly uncomfortable because of the way you're sitting. So if you're hunched over too much, eventually your back will hurt. But if you sit up straighter, it might hurt a little bit as you're getting used to it. But eventually, if you sit in an aligned posture, You can sit this way for a long time, quite comfortable. I once read a study that the two human postures that allow the human body to relax most deeply is the cross-legged position sitting on the floor like this and lying down completely. And generally, we don't encourage people to do meditation lying down unless there's a health reason to do it, because of how easy it is to fall asleep. So this is a posture that can, when, once you have kind of mastered it, allows for a very deep relaxation. Oddly enough, or surprisingly enough, sitting this way allows the body to relax deeper than sitting this way. You know, you think that, you know, just relax and, you know, this allows you to relax because you're being supported. But actually, this here, the alignment and kind of settling into gravity and letting everything settle and sink can happen best when you're fully aligned. So the posture meditation. One is to, I'll talk about both the chair and sitting on the floor. If you're on the, one of the reasons to sit so-called cross-legged, sit on the floor, is that it gives you a low center of gravity, and it gives you kind of a wide, stable base. You have the tripod effect of your knees and your butt, and you have this tripod that's holding up your torso. And the combination of that base and the low center of gravity lends itself to a certain kind of feeling of stable and grounded. It kind of feels good. It's easier to let go and relax than if you're sitting in a chair, your center of gravity is higher. And there's a kind of, you'll feel the difference. You know, it's fine to sit in a chair, but you don't have the benefit of being kind of grounded or settled in the same way. So I'll talk a little bit first about how you, if you want to try sitting on the floor, what we recommend. I recommend that you don't actually sit cross-legged, which is a classic idea, but sit what's called Taylor fashion or Burmese fashion, with one leg in front of the other, like I'm sitting here. So I don't know if you can see what same thing I'm doing with my arms. So cross-legged is where you, like this, but one in front of the other. There's no crossing. So the lower legs of both feet are on the mat in front of you. And that puts the least amount of torque on your knees, least amount of torque on your ankles and stuff. And it's much more comfortable if you're not used to it than sitting half lotus or full lotus, something like this. We recommend that people sit elevated, and so to get a cushion, these are called zafus, round cushions, sit in the front third of it. And so the front third kind of helps, you're sitting in the front third rather than smack on the middle. It can help a little bit the pelvis to tip forward slightly. And being elevated and having a pelvis tip forward slightly helps bring the knees down. So the knees can be touching the ground, so they have this good solid base. If you can't get your knees down, which many people can't, then if you want to sit on the floor anyway, is you can put something underneath your knees, like I have here, so that they're supported rather than dangling like this, which can create a strain after a while. Can be just a blanket or a pillow or something. And you want to experiment with how high you sit. It really has a lot to do with how open your hips are. If your hips are really open, then people find they can sit really low, close to the ground, so just a little bit of cushion. If the hips are tight, then it's usually good to sit really high, and people will build up quite a bit of height, sometimes two of these on top of each other or something, to sit so you get your knees down. There's an alternative ways of sitting on the floor. One is not cross-legged. Does anybody have a bench? Here, so Victor has a bench. So see that bench? So that you would kind of sit on your knees and put the bench underneath your thighs and your lower legs. You'd sit, so I'll show you. So you go like this. And some people find this works really well. Some people can't sit cross-legged. You still get your center of gravity down a little bit low, and it can feel good this way. Or you can take one of these round cushions and put it upright like this, and then stick it between your ankles and sit down on it like this. And so it's a nice alternative. So if cross-legged doesn't work, or you want to alternate so you don't build up a strain or something, this is a nice alternative. Sometimes when people are new to meditation, their legs fall asleep in this kind of posture. Most people, that stops after a few weeks. The blood finds new routes to go, or something. I don't know what happens, but it goes away after a few weeks usually. If your feet fall asleep during meditation, be slow in standing. You don't stand until you have all your sensation back. You can massage your feet or wiggle them or something until you feel it comes back. If it takes more than 4 or 5 minutes for your sensation to come back, then it's not a blood issue, circulation issue, but rather it's a nerve issue. You're pinching a nerve, and you never want to pinch a nerve. So if that ever happens in meditation, then next time you go to meditate, be sure to sit in some different way so you don't have that kind of numbing happening again, because you can have lasting damage. It's very rare, but it has happened occasionally. Mostly, I've known people in monasteries where they're meditating a lot, and they kind of force themselves to sit through too much. And also, so what you want when you're sitting on this cushion a little bit up is you want to have the curvature in your lower part of your back be slightly curved, so maybe a little accent of the natural curvature of the lower back. Some people tend to overarch, which puts a strain, and some people underarch, sometimes like a flat back in the lower back is not very good, puts a lot of strain, the muscles have to work harder. So you want to, that's one of the reasons to sit up higher, is to get just the right curvature there. You can sometimes feel how, if you kind of move back and forth, you can kind of find the place, the midpoint, where you feel the best support there. If you're sitting in a chair, the recommendation is that you don't cross your legs on the chair. Don't cross them anyway, but have the legs. The classic meditation posture for chairs is to have your legs parallel to each other with both feet flat on the floor. Though some people like to have their legs out to the angle like this and have a wide angle kind of support. They like that. It's best if your knees are slightly lower than your hips. You certainly don't want your knees higher than your hips, because if your knees are higher than your hips, it tends to push out the lower part of the back, and then it puts a strain there over time. So if you're tall and these chairs are too low for you, you can get some kind of support cushion from our cabinetry over there and build up some more height. If you're short and these chairs are too big, then you can use the same pillows and put them on the floor and put your feet on them so that you, again, have a good support, feel stable support. When you're sitting on a chair, the recommendation is you don't use the backrest, because there's a intimate relationship between what we do with our body and what goes on with our psychology. And to the degree to which we're trying to discover how to be self-reliant, it's easier to become self-reliant psychologically if you're self-reliant physically. So we recommend that if you're going to sit in a chair, to sit away from the backrest and be self-supporting that way. Some people have to use a backrest, and it's fine to use it if you want to. You just don't get an extra benefit from, you know, that comes from being self-supporting. If you use the backrest, it's best if you use, the lower the support can be, the better it is. Some people have to use support for the whole back, but some people, if you lean forward and scoot your back, your butt kind of into the, these chairs doesn't work so well, but a chair that has a backrest that goes all the way to the base, scoot yourself really far in and then snake up. So you get a really good, solid support, firm support against kind of just above your kind of the back hip bones there. That can really feel good and hold you upright in a nice way when you're sitting in a chair. Whether you're sitting on a chair or sitting on the floor, your hands, you do anything with the hands where both hands are doing the same thing. The classic posture is to have your hands together, one hand on top of the other. Though I don't do that usually. I just have my hands on my thighs, usually palm down. There's a little nice little trick that some people like to do when they meditate, when they get ready to sit. And you can do this both on the floor and on a chair. And that is to take your hands on either side of your hips and lift yourself almost off the chair or the cushion, letting your chest come forward. And then as you release your arms, relax your arms, then let your shoulders roll back a little bit. And if you do that, you'll probably feel more open in your chest, more open in your shoulders, and it makes a little more room for the shoulders to slowly begin to relax. You probably your posture feels a little more alert than it would be if you kind of a little slouched over. We generally meditate with the eyes closed. That's a kind of our general tradition. Some teachers do teach with meditating with the eyes open, so if you're used to that, you're welcome to do it. We recommend it eyes open mostly when people are really tired and in danger of falling asleep. Then meditate with your eyes open. But generally we recommend close your eyes. The classic recommendation is that you have your tongue resting against the roof of your mouth and your chin tucked down and back a little bit. And they say that those two things help control the wandering mind. And so you'll try it and you won't believe it. But it's a good thing to tuck your chin down and back a little bit. You'll see some people who think a lot, sometimes you see their chin going up like this, meditation. And also it's surprising how easy it is for the head to begin turning one way or the other and not really be balanced or centered. And if your head is too far forward, these muscles in the back here have to work really hard because you're sitting for some time. So you want to kind of, if you tuck down and back, it tends to make the head feel more balanced on that. That's kind of very basic ideas of posture. Do you have any questions about that you'd like to ask about posture? Yes, please.
So I've been sitting for a long time, but in the beginning I was out with my eyes closed. Now I'm closed, I can actually concentrate better with my eyes open.
Yeah, you're welcome to sit with the eyes open. Some people find that's the case, that they don't wander off. Some people find the mind wanders off more when their eyes are open. Some people find the mind wanders off more when their eyes are closed. If that works for you, great. Just be aware, just be alert to the fact that as you get concentrated and still, that at some point it might be appropriate to close your eyes. And some of the deeper stages of concentration come when the eyes closed. That's one of the reasons why we emphasize eyes closed, is that some of the deeper stages of concentration seem to be easily accessed when the eyes are closed. Yes. So you have an injury, and are you a little bit louder?
I'm working through an injury, so it's easier to lay down right now.
Oh, yes.
So do you just lay down, or are there...
Yeah. There's space here if you want to lay down now. So usually, people do it different ways. Depends on how it works your injury. But Andrea Fella, the other teacher that I teach with, she has had a long-term back problem, so she does a lot of her meditation lying down. Sometimes you'll see her, role modeling, laying down up here. And so generally, if it's okay, if there's no other reasons to do it other ways, is you do it on your back, so flat on your back, and you bring your knees up, so you're kind of, your body like this, and then angle like that. And so your little bit of effort has to go to keep the knees up. And then what she does is that she has one hand that she brings up, one hand just stands on her side, or I don't know what she does with the left hand, but the right hand she has pointing to the ceiling. So it's a... The upper part of the arm travels along the side of the torso, and then the lower half of the arm points straight up in her. She keeps her hand like this, straight up. And then if she starts losing her mindfulness, her hand starts falling. And so it's a little, it's like a teacher for her. It reminds her, oh, pay attention, wake up, pay more care, be here more. And so that's keeps her from falling asleep, because if you fall asleep, then it goes like this. And your hand falls on your chest. So, you can try that. Anything else? Seems okay, you want to try it? So you've been now sitting here for like almost an hour. So if you want to take and stand and stretch for just a minute, just to get some movement going, and then we'll do a little guided meditation together. So as I've said, one of the important tasks in learning to meditate is to train or support the mind, the attention, to be in the present moment. And you'll find out once you start meditating how easy it is for the mind to be thinking about the future, thinking about the past, or involved in neither future or past, but just in fantasy, not really connected here, grounded here in the present moment. And this is completely normal. This is how it is for almost all people. So it's not like a personal failing that your mind's not able to stay in the present moment. So you can be relaxed about it, but you don't have to just kind of live with it as the way it has to be. Slowly, what we do is we're training ourselves to be more and more in the present moment. And there's two things that help us do that. One is that attention is a little bit like a muscle. And the more you use that muscle, the stronger it becomes. So use the muscle of being in the present moment, then that your ability to stay in the present moment becomes stronger and stronger. The other is not a doing exactly, but an undoing, is relaxing. And so a lot of the reason why we spin out into the past and the future is that we're somehow worked up, we're somehow anxious or involved or agitated, caught by something. And so one of the things that helps us to be in the present moment is to relax. And in fact, someone who's really, really relaxed will probably very much be in the present moment. You have to be not relaxed to be in the past and the future. So those two things support this, is to repetition, building the muscle, and then learning to relax. It sounds like maybe they're two opposite things, but they work together. So take a posture, meditation posture, that hopefully expresses a little bit of alertness in the posture. You can do that little trick of pushing yourself up off the, lifting up and then rolling your shoulders back a little bit, feeling a little more open in your chest. And then gently close your eyes. And one of the useful ways of beginning to meditate is to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. You can really fill your rib cage, your chest, as you breathe in deeply. And then as you exhale, a long exhale, relax. And those deep in-breaths, those deep breathing, can help you, to help remind you that you're supposed to be here and now, here in this body at this time. And it also can begin the process of beginning to relax and let go of any tension you're holding. So taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. And then letting your breathing return to normal. And for the kind of meditation that we're doing, we just let ourselves breathe in a normal way. We give no special emphasis for like yogic breathing or heavy breathing or fast breathing or something that some yogic traditions do. Rather, we just let the breath body breathe the way it wants to breathe. Also, at the beginning of a session of meditation, it can be good to scan through your body to see if there's any places of holding or tension that might be easy to relax or soften. You can start at your forehead and around your eyes. Just feel the area of your body. And then as you exhale, perhaps you can soften around your forehead and eyes. Helpful to soften the jaw. Some people carry a lot of tension in their jaws. If you do have tension there, sometimes it's nice just to drop your mouth open. So your mouth opens up. And then float the teeth back together. It can be helpful as you exhale to soften around the shoulders and the shoulder blades. Some people can find it helpful to soften in the area of the chest. And then to relax the stomach, the belly. In fact, it's recommended that you unbuckle your belts so your stomachs and kind of hang forward in the most unbecoming way. First taking some deep breaths, then breathing normally, then scanning your body to see if you can relax a little bit more. And then bringing your awareness to notice where your breathing is most pronounced, where the experience of the body, where the body experiences breathing. The movements of the chest, movements of the belly, the sensations of the air going in and out through the nostrils or top of the lip. Notice where the experience of breathing is the most compelling for you, most easiest to notice, easiest place for you to notice where you're breathing, how you're breathing, that you're breathing. If you have a hard time discerning your breathing, you can put your hand on your belly and perhaps you'll feel the movement of your belly going up and down. The only time that you're ever breathing is in the present moment. And so if you're noticing that you're breathing, then your attention is in the present moment. And we use the rhythm of breathing as a way to begin training the mind be present. Every time you come back to noticing your breathing, you're strengthening that attention to the present. Every time you let go of what you're thinking about or imagining, you're supporting that ability to relax. Meditation tends to work best if you don't worry how it's going. Don't measure how it's going. Don't judge yourself how it's going. Be very simple and easy. Whenever you can, notice that you're breathing. And then stay with that noticing. Hang in there. Experience the full rhythm. Breathing in and breathing out. Whenever you notice that you're drifted off in thought, thinking about something else, in a gentle, relaxed way, let go of that concern and bring yourself back into the breathing. We talk about trusting your breathing, or entrusting yourself to the simplicity of breathing in and out mindfully. And then there's a way of helping you stay with the breathing more regularly, like a little anchor you place in the breath. And that is very, very softly in your mind. Say the word in as you breathe in and out as you breathe out. Or as your chest and belly rise, say the word rising. And as your chest and belly fall, say the word falling. So say a little word that's about your breathing that keeps you connected, reminds you to stay there for each in-breath and each out-breath. Very quietly, softly, a little. That little anchor that keeps you there so you're less likely to wander off. And see if you can ease up on what you're thinking about, even letting go of it, for a few more minutes. Be okay with how you're feeling, what's going on. And turn yourself over to the experience of breathing in and breathing out, as if that's the only thing you need to do. Perhaps a vacation from all other doings, all other things to think about or worry about. All you need to do is just be there as you breathe in, be present as you breathe out. And then to end this meditation, you can take a few, before you open your eyes, take a few long, slow, deep breaths, feeling the connection with your body again. And after a few long, deep breaths, when you're ready, then you can open your eyes. So a common human tendency is that if you set yourself to do a task and you don't succeed, you get frustrated, or you give up, or something, or you tighten up and try harder. Those approaches don't work with meditation. Sooner or later, and it's usually real soon, meditation doesn't work. Meaning that really soon you'll discover the mind wanders away from being present. So you're trying to be present, the mind wanders away. So you're trying to, that's what your task you're trying to do is to be present, but you don't succeed. So if you have a habit of being upset if you don't succeed in what you're doing, you're going to cause undue suffering for yourself when you meditate. Take it for granted the mind's going to wander off, that you'll lose the present moment. So it's normal. But don't be complacent about it. Don't just kind of like, okay, you know, it's normal to wander off in thought. I think I'll stay wandered off in thought for 32 years. I'll get back eventually. The idea is when you notice that your mind wanders off, it doesn't have to matter how quickly or how often. As soon as you notice it, we're training ourselves to do two things. To come back to the breathing, come back to the present moment through the breath for now. And the second training is be relaxed about having wandered off. Don't be upset about it. Don't take it as a personal failing. Just take it the mind, that's what the mind did. And now your job is to come back. And it doesn't matter if 10,000 times in a period of meditation your mind wanders off, it's okay. All that matters is 10,000 times you came back. And just come back. Come back. Come back when you can. If you go 5 minutes without, you know, you checked out and you're in Hawaii on vacation in your thoughts for 5-10 minutes, and then you kind of wake up and say, where am I? Be okay with that. As soon as you can, come back. So there's a training in beginning to become compassionate or accepting or non-critical or not in conflict with what is. That's part of this mindfulness training. People are often so much in conflict, so much caught by our desires and our aversions and our fears. And so we're beginning to train ourselves not to be caught by that so much and be a little bit more relaxed about how things are. Because meditation unfolds best if you're relaxed about how things are, including be relaxed about when meditation's not working. Because if you're not relaxed about when it's not working, then it's not going to work. Make some sense? So maybe we can take a few minutes if any of you have any comments or questions about that doing up meditation practice that we just did. And if you could use the mic, then I can hear better and everybody else can hear.
While I was doing meditation, I felt like I was floating.
So when doing the meditation, you felt like you were floating.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That can happen. Would it, that bother you, or was it nice?
No, it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of when I was young, and I would swim in the river, and then I would just let my body be carried by the water, and that's how it felt.
Beautiful. Yeah, so when we're able to relax and be in the present moment, one of the effects that some people will experience is a feeling of floating, and sometimes a sense of the boundaries of the body begin to dissolve, and things are very soft. That can happen. Now, it's nice that she says that. I'm very happy. The human tendency is, some of you, some people, is, well, that's how it's supposed to be. And I didn't have that. I was mostly thinking about what I'm supposed to have for dinner. Therefore, I did it wrong. You know, so that kind of thinking, comparative thinking like that, just adds more stress to the system. The idea is, you have your meditation, and everyone's meditation, everyone's personal experience when they do this mindfulness meditation is going to be very personal. There's no need to compare yourself to other people. It's actually your way, what unfolds for you, we say, is really important. Everyone has their own path, their own thing they have to work through, their own thing that has to happen. So we can be happy for you, and we'd be happy for someone who has something, you know, something very different. So, someone else.
I have bad sinuses and like a very fluid, happy cranium. So, when I have my eyes closed, my eyes tear, and I have to wipe them a lot. I'm always blinking if they're open, but when they're closed, you know, they water, and a lot of saliva. So, I'm just very aware of all like all the fluids and trying to breathe, and it starts to get. Actually, I end up being resistant sometimes to returning to concentrating on my breath because I don't like my nose.
Yeah.
And
okay, so there is occasionally some people for whom the breath is counterindicated as a meditation object. And so that's one of the reasons. Maybe if you have sinus difficulties, the breath just kind of you're staying too close to the world of sinuses. So there's a few things you might try doing. One of the things is recommend then is to not we use the breath as the primary anchor to the present moment. That we train ourselves to be in the present moment. And then next week's we'll expand out beyond that. For you, you might try using sounds as your anchor. Sounds are only happen in the present moment. And so if there's a sound, it's in the present moment. And so rather than focusing on your body or your breath, bring your attention to your ears and just very relaxedly hear the sounds that are around you. And just if you want to use a little mental note to stay present, just very gently, softly say, hearing. And then listen, hearing. Just stay there. The mind wanders off, come back to sound. And because the hearing maybe is, you know, so distant from the actual physical sensation, you might be able to kind of just ignore this then more easily and then get more settled. Does that seem okay? Go ahead and try that. The next week we can talk about it some more if that doesn't work. So I saw a hand up here.
I felt myself becoming so relaxed that I felt that my posture was slipping and that I was not really able to maintain that. Do you have advice for that?
Yeah, so you have. There's two choices you can make. One is that if you know it might, and if you're not used to getting relaxed and it's nice, you can just go with it and see what that's like, and maybe you get more and more relaxed. The danger is that usually when the posture goes and you get relaxed, at some point our alertness begins to wane, and even you might fall asleep. So you could, the other experiment you can do is rather than going with it, is to sit up straight again, even at the expense of losing a little bit of the relaxation. Because in the long term, as I said earlier, you'll actually be able to relax more deeply with an alert, upright, aligned posture. So just straighten up again. Yes?
When I moved away from the chair, usually I'm sitting against the chair. When I moved away from the chair, my back and thighs started aching. And
yes.
Will that disappear?
So I don't know. I can't tell you why. But what's very common is that many people don't have the postural habits that allow for the right, aligned, upright spine. Some muscles are weak from always being supported by a backrest or something, and some muscles are really tight from always being curled over or bent over. And so when we start taking an aligned, upright posture, we have to contend with that. And the muscles that are weak will get tired, and the muscles that are tight will start to ache. Chronically tense muscles go numb. As the muscles wake up, they go through a phase where they feel painful. And some people feel like they're going in the wrong direction. I'm meditating, I feel more pain than I had before, more tense than I was before. But you have to go, if there's a lot of tension in the body, you have to go through a phase of really feeling the tension so the tension can unravel. So in the long term, you're better off discovering how to sit in a good aligned way, but you want to take your time with it. Don't hurry. And build up slowly. So maybe, you know, at first it's just 5 minutes every time. Maybe you meditate for 20 minutes every day, but maybe the first 5 minutes you don't use the backrest. And then after a few weeks you do 6 minutes, and then 7 minutes. Slowly you begin working out the kinks. Over to your left. Yeah.
What happens when you continually fall asleep?
Say it again?
What happens when you continually fall asleep? Yeah.
So there's a number of reasons why people fall asleep in meditation. One is that here in this society, a lot of people need to sleep more than they need to meditate. So, so it's good to sleep, get enough sleep. The other is that people carry a lot of tension. And so sometimes we don't necessarily need conventional sleep, but falling asleep is a way of kind of dissipating the tension. And so that's also could be useful. But sometimes if you have other ways of dissipating the tension, then you don't have to use meditation for that. Exercising, for example, you can do that very, very, very efficiently sometimes. The other is sometimes falling asleep is a sign of getting too relaxed. And some people associate meditation with getting relaxed, and so they're kind of soothing themselves and pushing the relaxation, trying to make themselves relaxed. And it works to some degree, but you can overdo it, and then you get kind of dull and start drifting off. And so you generally don't encourage people to soothe themselves through meditation. It's good to relax and let go of tension, but don't soothe yourself. Because what you want to be balanced, neither soothing yourself nor depriving yourself, just present. Another reason why people fall asleep in meditation is related to the phenomena of little babies when they get overstimulated. If you take an alert baby and put it in an environment where there's a lot of sound, they'll fall asleep. It's a way of protecting themselves from being overstimulated. As adults, that mechanism functions occasionally when if there's a lot of emotional material that's about to come up that we haven't been facing. And sometimes meditation can bring forth stuff that we've been holding at bay, because as you relax and as you start paying more attention, it's hard to keep things at bay anymore. And things begin surfacing. Sometimes the mind, the wisdom of the mind says, this is too much. I'll fall asleep so I don't have to face it. And if that's the if we have that psychological reason for falling asleep, I'm very respectful of that kind of falling asleep. You still want to do the best you can to meditate, but you don't want to kind of bulldoze yourself through that. There's maybe, you know, you're not quite ready to see what's this deeper stuff is, what's bubbling up. So just keep meditating and wait for the stuff to come. So those are some of the reasons. Now there's some options what you can do when you fall asleep, when you feel really sleepy in meditation. One is you can sit up straighter. And just sometimes the physical energy of sitting up straighter can help. You can open your eyes. Generally when we meditate with eyes open, it's nice to have the eyes pointing about 45 degrees down. And imagine you're looking, the kind of focus you want is you're looking at a mountain far in the distance. So you're not really looking at anything. That can help. Some people, what they do when they really get sleepy is they do standing meditation, which means they just quietly stand. You can do it here. Just quietly stand in your place. And generally, if you're standing, there's a little more energy and alertness, and there's longer, further to fall. And just those things kind of keep the energy going and keep people alert. Okay, thank you for those comments. And next week I'll give you a chance to ask more, and I'll stay at the end. If anybody wants to ask me more, you can come up to the front. A few things to say. There's a pink sheet of paper. That's every week I have this handout where I give some of the instructions, kind of review them on the piece of paper, and give a little guidelines and some exercises you can do at home that supports or augments this mindfulness thing we're doing. This 6-week course works a lot better for you if you meditate every day for the 6 weeks, because if you practice it, then you start understanding what we're talking about and you start having a foundation to better understand what happens the following weeks. If you don't meditate at all, come anyway. It's okay. You'll get some benefit. But you will get more benefit if you can do it every day. As one teacher said recently, he said, it's too onerous to expect you're going to meditate every day. What he said was, commit yourself to meditating 7 times a week. And you could decide whether it is. Maybe build up some credit. You know, one day do it twice. But a daily meditation is very powerful, very helpful. And it's very powerful in the cumulative effect of it over many months. It's quite something what happens. It's generally most helpful to meditate the same time and the same place every day. So there's kind of a built-in habit that builds a kind of association with it all that supports and helps it to make work. Classically, it's early in the morning. There's some people, they wait until they have their coffee. Some people, it works better in the evening or in the afternoon. I found that for a long time, I meditated morning and then at 6 o'clock when I came back from work. And there was something very, very helpful for me to meditate right back from after coming from work. It kind of cleared out the day for me and made me fresh for the evening. It's also helpful to meditate at a time and a place where no one's going to disturb you. So if you can, unplug the phone or turn off the phone. Nowadays, a lot of people have phones with timers, so you can set it to ring. You can actually, if you have a smartphone, you can download meditation timers for free, and then you can set it to go off after however long you want to sit. And now you hear a nice bell. After 15, 20 minutes, it tells you it's time to stop meditating. If you don't have a smartphone, but you do have a computer, on our website, right? You can download from our website for free a meditation timer that you can put on your computer, and then your computer can accompany you in meditation. So, And then there's a book. I have a book called The Issue at Hand, which has some essays. Some of the essays are pretty introductory essays on this mindfulness practice we do here. And we distribute it here for free for anybody. As I said, everything we offer here is offered freely, so my book as well. And there's lots of copies if you run out on the counter. But you're welcome to take the book if you want, The Issue at Hand. And if we run out, if you have any questions about anything, you could, Dawn here is the manager for tonight, and she's been a long-time practitioner. You can ask her questions about practice. And Chen Kwan here also is also a long-time practitioner and been a manager of these before, so you can ask her also if you need something. And also, we also have now, as of this year, we have my book, Issue at Hand, in Spanish. So if you'd rather have it in Spanish than English, then Chen Kwan, right? You know where they are? Oh. She will soon. You can ask Chen Kwan or me, and we'll get you a Spanish copy. So I think that's enough. I hope that was clear enough and gave you a little start. I'd encourage you, if it's possible, to don't let yourself get discouraged whatsoever if anything discouraging happens as you meditate, don't be discouraged if you don't actually quite end up doing it the 7 times a week. Just do your best. And do their best, and then come back next week. And next week we'll talk about mindfulness of the body. Some of you probably already found your body was challenging, maybe some discomfort in different parts of the body. So next week we'll talk about how to incorporate or take care of that as we do the meditation practice. So thank you very much.